Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everyone to Buddhadasa and Dipanyo Archives for the teachings of Venerable Ajahn Pasano, the theme being New Year, New Life, Life Can Be Improved. We have an afternoon session, and then we have an evening session. Just a few announcements to begin the day. If you have one of these things, please turn it off at this time. If you need to leave the room and use the bathroom or make a phone call, then that's okay. Just we try to keep relatively quiet near the meditation room out of respect for the people meditating. So we'll have sitting meditation, walking meditation, and instruction. And I did not create any schedule, but am asking Lumpur Pasano to decide what he thinks is best for the group. And so when it comes to walking meditation, as some of you may know for being here, there are many places around BIA to do walking. There's the garden that's connected to the Suan Rotfai. There's the third floor, also the first floor. So I'd like to share a brief biography of Venerable Lumpur Pasano for those of you who may not have known that Ajahn Pasano took ordination in Thailand in 1974, so about 39, 40 years ago. With Venerable Prakru Jnana Sirawatana as his preceptor. During the first years as a monk, he was taken by his teacher to meet Venerable Ajahn Chah, with whom he asked to be allowed to stay with and train. He was one of the early residents of Wat Pa Nanachat, and Ajahn Pasano became the abbot in his ninth pansa. And during his incumbency, Wat Pa Nanachat developed considerably both in physical size and reputation. Spending 24 years living in Thailand, Venerable Ajahn Pasano became well known and highly respected as a, not only as a monk, but as a Dhamma teacher. He moved to California on New Year's Eve of 1997 to share the abbotship of Wat Appayagiri with Venerable Ajahn Amaro, who was recently here teaching. In 2010, Ajahn Amaro accepted the invitation to serve as the abbot at Wat Amaravati in England, and now Ajahn Pasano is the sole abbot of Wat Appayagiri in California, USA. So we'll also have time for questions and answers today. I think in the evening there'll be more of the formal talk time, and the afternoon will be a little more practice-oriented. But if you have Dhamma questions or questions about his monastery in America, then the question-answer time would be a good time to talk about that. Without further ado, I'd like to invite Venerable Ajahn Pasano to teach the Dhamma. Thank you.
Okay. I generally have a soft speaking voice, so I try to get this microphone up as close as I can. I'd just like to welcome everybody. And as David said, then we'll take the this afternoon as an opportunity for practice time, and this evening will be a formal talk, but I'll give some introductory thoughts and instruction on sitting meditation. We can sit for a bit. I'll do a bit of explanation of walking meditation. We can go and do some walking meditation and then come back for another sit, and then I'll open it up for questions and have a period of questions and answers. So that I think the program goes to 5:30, so we'll I think just having the opportunity to slow down, cultivate formally the qualities of mindfulness, and Bangkok is a busy city, and it's nice to be able to just slow down. The of course the center here is in a very peaceful corner of Bangkok, and so that to be able to make good use of the environment and the actual center here, it's a good opportunity to be to have this time. That just reflecting on the just the purpose of meditation in Buddhism, when the Buddha speaks of, actually, he doesn't even use the word meditation. I mean, that's a kind of a Western application of a sort of an English concept, English word. And the word that the Buddha uses is bhavana, mostly. And there's a few different words that are used. That's the most frequently used word. And that bhavana means cultivation or development. So that from a Buddhist perspective, what we're doing is cultivating and developing qualities of mind and heart that are conducive to well-being and clarity. And it's important to make that perspective fairly clear, because just sometimes when things are concepts are translated, then it becomes not totally clear what we're doing. So that, like, one of the words that we use a lot, and say, like, for meditation, is concentration. So that.
Is it possible to be a few inches closer to the mic?
I can do. Okay, is that better? Okay. So that the word that we oftentimes use is concentration. It's like in the Eightfold Path, Sammasamadhi is called right, which is usually the meditation aspect of the path. And it's always translated as right concentration. And I don't know about anybody else, but when if I'm told to concentrate, or I have to get my concentration together, then I start to get tense. I start to get tight. And I think that's part of the feeling around that, just that concept of concentration. Oh, I've got to concentrate my mind, and you start to tighten up. So that's actually not the point of it. There's all sorts of ways we can tighten up already, but meditation or this cultivation is not one of them. I particularly like how it's translated into Thai, Kwam Tang Jai Man, which means like the firm establishing of the mind. To me, that conveys a really positive approach, so that when we can firmly establish the mind, I think that's a... And of course, that requires all of the different aspects of the, say, meditative aspect of application of effort, cultivation of mindfulness, and then the settling of the mind and being able to bring the mind together so that it actually functions harmoniously with itself. So that this aspect of cultivation, bhavana, is that development of the inner qualities that help the mind to become clear and steady. So that's what we're trying to do when we sit meditation. And there's many, many kinds of techniques and methods, and usually every teacher is plugging their method, but it's not so much about the technique or the method. It's the method is, say, a framework or a template of how we can then direct our attention and settle the mind so that it's clear. It's when the mind is clear that it's able to understand things clearly. There's a phrase that comes up in the scriptures which conveys the goal of what we're trying to do, because in terms of a goal, the Buddha emphasized over and over and over again that basically I teach just one thing: suffering and the end of suffering, and just that bringing an end to the things that we find difficult, problematic, stressful, dissatisfying, that leave us in a place of dis-ease. So that the with that goal in mind, the the quality that the Buddha talks about that arises out of the say, samadhi, the firm establishing of the mind, is a knowledge and vision of the way things truly are. So it's just, that is why clarity is so important, because we're not trying to think our way through anything, we're not trying to come up with some new take on a philosophical concept. What we're trying to do is apprehend and have a clear knowledge and vision of the true nature of things. And that needs a clear and steady mind. It needs a heart that is not just pulled around by its moods and its likes and dislikes. And, we tend to spend our time reacting to either the contact with the external world or our relationship with our own internal world, and we tend to, if it goes the way we like it, we have a good mood, we're happy, it's very easeful, and when things don't go the way we like it, then we get fed up, depressed, irritated, agitated, and we go up and down like this all the time. And even though we are in adult bodies, the kind of emotional state is pretty much like little children. So that yeah, we can smile and laugh when we get what we want, and we frown and are miserable when we don't get what we want. It's that simple. And of course, the point of Buddhist practice is to be able to have a base of clarity and steadiness, so that we're not shaken by the changing nature of the world around us. And because the reality is that whether we have clarity and wisdom or we don't, the world is going to change on us. The moods are going to change. Our internal thoughts and feelings are going to change. That's just the way things actually are. What we can do is develop and cultivate an internal foundation of clarity and steadiness. And that's really, when I think of what is the purpose of meditation, that's really what the purpose of it is. So that when we're, and I think it's helpful to have that framework, because if we're meditating in order to, like in the English language, or we're trying to concentrate our mind, then we oftentimes just make ourselves more tense and tight. Or even, looking at the scriptures and the descriptions of a meditative state of mind, you say that, we have to have this one-pointed concentration. And because that's how it's usually translated, that's how it's usually described, and that, which of course I think is a lousy translation, but it sets up these expectations of what we should be, and I think that it does ourselves a disservice, and usually I think creates unnecessary obstacles for our peacefulness, our inner peace and inner clarity. So to recognize that what we're trying to do is cultivate an awareness and attention that allows the mind to be more steady and to be more clear. And when I teach meditation in terms of a technique, then I'll invariably use mindfulness of breathing, mainly because that's what I like. But it's also what I'm most familiar with, and as I said, there's many different types of meditations. But I think whether one practices mindfulness of breathing, or one uses another technique, the actual principles of the directing of attention, the attitude and frame of mind that we try to set up, those will be very, very simple and easily applicable to whatever meditation technique you're either familiar with or that you're comfortable with. But with the instructions that I give will be using mindfulness of breathing, in good company with that. Ajahn Buddhadasa, the inspiration for this center, mindfulness of breathing played a large part in his instruction. There's a He gave, this is like way back in the, probably the earlier mid-1960s. As was his wont, he would take a theme and he would explore it for week after week, month after month, sometimes even year after year. Mindfulness of breathing was a theme that he explored for, I'm not sure how long, and I know that they compiled many of the teachings that he gave in these sort of weekly talks, and there was three books that were compiled out of that. So that's a lot of talks. So he did that, and then toward the end of his life, he came back to mindfulness of breathing and really emphasized it as a method. That's one, it's very flexible, and it's very immediate in the fact that if you're alive and you're actually conscious, then you can pay attention to your breathing. It's always there. So that it's a very handy meditation object to be to rely on. And so that just taking the ordinary experience of breathing and using it to establish our attention, so that sitting in a comfortable position, whether one's sitting on the floor or sitting in a chair, main thing is that one is sitting in a comfortable position so that there one can have an erect posture. The back is nice and straight. One's not leaning forward, leaning back, off to the left, off to the right. That there's an opportunity for a nice, erect, alert posture. And also to be able to adjust the sitting. I noticed that they have these really neat cushions which help for people, because it's like having a cushion that raises up your back and having the raising up the back, and then having both of the knees on the floor, having the legs kind of flat on the floor, in Thai, if you sit like this, this is a meditation posture. If you sit like this, that's sitting and eating. That's how you eat. So that nang samadhi la nang kin khao man mai muen gan. So that having the legs, that also helps with just so that you don't cut off the circulation, have your knees and your legs flat on the cushion on the floor, then that helps the circulation of the body. Same with sitting up straight. It's not so straight that you're tense or you're forcing the posture, but it's just that's actually how your body is constructed. And to be able to allow the spine, the shoulders, the hips, the head to be in alignment, then it helps to be able to sit comfortably for a longer period of time, because of you're not cutting the blood off, you're not trying to hold your body up with your, if you hold your body up with a nice balanced posture, that helps rather than trying to hold your body up using muscles, like your shoulders or the upper body. Sometimes we try to hold ourselves up. That'll tire you out. Oftentimes when people say, whenever I meditate, I get back pain. Usually what that is that it's one's trying to hold oneself up upright using the upper body muscles. And it gets tiring and it gets painful. But if there's a nice balanced posture and the back is nice and straight, then the body holds itself up, especially if the, some people do have really good posture and are able to, say, sit in full lotus or half lotus. I've been a monk for 40 years. I still am not able to do it. So that the props are helpful. So having a cushion that one's able to raise the back up a bit, then, because what happens if you sit flat and there isn't a tilt to the pelvis, what happens is the back goes back like this, and then you start to try to hold your body up with the upper body, and it starts to hurt. But if one can raise your butt up a little bit higher using a cushion or using a full lotus posture, then your pelvis tilts forward a little bit and then your back comes up nice and straight naturally. Take a look at the Buddha image up at the front. Almost always, Buddha images are a really good example of good posture and a good meditative posture. You hardly ever see, or I've even never seen, a Buddha image up on the front of the meditation hall or a shrine, and it's sort of the Buddha sitting sort of slumped like this. They don't make Buddha images like that. So that is a really good example of a balanced posture. And even sitting in a chair, to be able to adjust your sitting so that you're able to have a nice balanced posture and be supported, your back supported, and then not getting caught into a slump, because sometimes sometimes chairs are a lot of it depends how they're designed, but sometimes they're actually designed to slump, so it's not very they're not very helpful sometimes. But one can always adjust one's posture, whether one's on the floor or in a chair, and then it turns it into a meditation posture. It's something very ordinary. You're sitting anyway. You're breathing, paying attention to the sensation of the in-breath the sensation of the out-breath. Taking the natural ability of the mind to pay attention and to direct that attention to the experience of breathing in and breathing out. And you're not trying to regulate the breathing, you're not trying to control the breathing. All you're trying to do is be attentive to the sensation of the breath coming in, the breath going out. So that takes a lifting up of interest and motivation within the mind. I think most of our minds tend to just get caught by whatever's either interesting or irritating or confusing, and we get swept up with that. But to consciously direct attention to a neutral object like the sensation of the breath. It's a neutral object, so it's not, your mind's not naturally inclined to want to attend to that sensation, so that one has to bring up within oneself that interest and motivation, and then to sustain that, so that taking the sensation of the breath, paying attention to as the breath comes in, it touches the tip of the nose, comes into the body, passes the chest, the throat, the chest, the abdomen rises. As the breath goes out, the abdomen falls. There's a sensation in the chest, the throat, tip of the nose as the breath passes out of the body. So starting to pay attention to that simple rhythm, the rhythm of the breath as it comes in, the breath as it goes out, the sensation of touch, of contact, as the we experience the breath in the body, and to pay attention to that rhythm, cultivate an interest in that rhythm. And as we do that, each in-breath, each out-breath, one has to pay attention. One has to renew attention, because it's hard to sustain attention on a neutral object for any length of time. The mind tends to wander, the mind tends to have other thoughts come up, other impressions, memories, associations, so that it requires us to bring attention to the fore within the mind. And that's actually the purpose of the meditation. As we bring that attention up to the forefront of our conscious awareness, we sustain that, we develop it, we gain a momentum of awareness, and clarity starts to establish itself. So that that simple act of raising up attention within the mind and sustaining it is the purpose of the exercise. And as we cultivate a continuity of that attention, it's natural that the mind becomes more clear and steady. Now, as I said, there's going to be different thoughts come up, there's going to be different, and one needs to just reestablish. It isn't, you don't have to analyze the thoughts, you don't have to get into conflict with them, you don't have to argue with them. You don't have to get fascinated by them. You don't have to get drawn into the storyline of the thought processes. Just there's a thought. Come back to the breath. And the mind wanders. Once you reestablish awareness, once it wanders 10 times, you reestablish awareness 10 times. It wanders 100 times, you reestablish attention 100 times. That's the exercise, is that not getting trapped by the tendencies of the mind to proliferate and get lost in all the impressions, all the memories, all the speculations, all the worries that we're capable of. We don't have to cultivate that bit of our mind very much. We're pretty good at that already. What we're not very good at is stillness and clarity. So to be giving importance to that, taking an interest in it, cultivating that motivation that allows us to sustain attention. So that using something incredibly simple, like the sensation of the breath as it comes in and goes out, and one can pay attention to the whole, say, the experience of the in-breath, the experience of the out-breath, or one can just pay attention at the tip of the nose as a point of contact, or at the rising and falling of the abdomen. A lot of that is basically whatever works, whatever seems comfortable and interesting for you. So that maybe what we can do is take this next period of time sit quietly, cultivate that attention on the in-breath and the out-breath, and the developing of the inner qualities that help that attention and clarity to establish itself and to grow within. So we can just sit in a comfortable posture, and I'll ring the bell when we want to change postures.